Fancy a game?
Tyler Bischoff is technically correct.
And another shot, and they score! Jake Bischoff, the defenseman! Rebound, Bischoff! He shoots, he scores! Bischoff on the backhand!
Goal! Jake Bischoff! Jake Bischoff, the Nuggets!
Hello, Reality Check. Mike Grimala of the Las Vegas Sun will join us. You know, we got beat down by Nevada last night. We might get into the Pelicans moving to Las Vegas. We have a Jake Bischoff alert in the show today. UNLV football also, has a big name transfer coming in. Ooh, scary. But we're going to start with UNLV basketball. 87-70 was the final score last night. Lost to Nevada. UNLV was never even close in that one. Never had a lead. I don't think they ever got within single digits the second half. They got it down to 15 one time, and people were like, uh-oh, because the spread was, what, 9 or 10 points? People were like, uh-oh, got a chance to cover here. Nope, didn't happen. Lost by 17. I think the first obvious question walking away from that for me was, is the gap really this big between the two teams? Because, like, they lost by the same amount of points to San Diego State that they did to Nevada. But you can look at that San Diego State team and say they're not really 17 points better than UNLV. Like, the gap between San Diego State and UNLV is not that big. But the gap between UNLV and Nevada is. And honestly, it might be more. Like, Nevada led by 25 in this game. UNLV, I mean, it was never close. This was never truly a game. There was never a time where you thought UNLV might actually have a chance to come back in this. Like, it just was never close. So, yeah, the gap really is that big. I don't think that's anything anybody didn't expect necessarily, but UNLV's nowhere close to that team. They're nowhere close to an NCAA tournament berth either. Maybe the more important question is, how much does it matter that UNLV cannot compete with a top 10 team in the country? Because everyone will acknowledge UNLV's rebuilding, and I don't think anybody would expect UNLV to be able to beat or compete with a top 10. I mean, you might expect them to be able to compete a little bit more than they did. But I don't think anybody out there really expects UNLV to, like, oh, they're going to upset Nevada, for sure. So does it really matter that they can't compete with them? And it does. And the reason is because that team is in your conference. And the stated goal of UNLV Athletics, they have lowered their own bar to, their goal is simply to compete for Mountain West Championships. If you went right now and asked Desiree Reed-Francois about getting into a Power 5 conference, her answer, 100%, her answer will be, we're focused on winning titles in the Mountain West. We're focused on being the best of the Mountain West, and everything else will take care of itself. That is her answer anytime you ask her about the Power 5. So that's their goal. Like, their stated goal is, hey, we're just worried about being the best in this conference. So that team's in your conference. So it does, in fact, matter that UNLV gets blown out by a top 10 team, because that's, if your goal is to win the Mountain West, that's the team you have to beat. And if you can't even come close to them, yeah, it matters. Like, you'll have to beat that team. And everyone in this city thinks Eric Musselman is leaving at the end of the year and they're going to be terrible again. I don't know that that's true. If Musselman stays, Nevada's roster next year is going to be projected to be still much better than UNLV's roster next year. So if he stays, like, they're going to be the favorites probably in the Mountain West again. It might not be top 10 in the country, but they're going to be Mountain West favorites again next year, as long as Musselman doesn't leave. So that's the team you have to beat. So it does matter that that team is that much better than you, like, to the point where you don't even belong on the same floor. But I'm going to ask you to ignore it.
Done. Moving on.
Like, ignore, if you're trying to evaluate Marvin Menzies and UNLV basketball and this rebuilding phase, ignore the games against Nevada. It's not going to accomplish anything except frustration. I will certainly break this rule because I love Marvin Menzies versus Eric Musselman comparisons. They're so much fun to do. They're very easy. Do it all the time. So I'm going to break my own rule here. But, like, what you have in the Mountain West, you have four, maybe five bad teams. I think New Mexico's bad, but they're not quite terrible. But you have some bad teams. Wyoming is awful. San Jose State is awful. Colorado State's not good. Air Force is not good. And then you have New Mexico thrown in there, too. So UNLV is going to play 10 games against bad teams. Ignore those games, too. Like, okay. What they do in those games is not indicative of UNLV building a program. All that happens playing those games is you're proving that you're mediocre. Like, if you're better than Colorado State, you're a mediocre basketball team. That's all that proves. So ignore those games and ignore the ones against Nevada this year. The ones that you should pay attention to, and I think this is how Desiree Francois should evaluate the program too. That second tier of the Mountain West. San Diego State, Utah State, Fresno State, Boise State. Those are the teams. How does UNLV play against those teams? They've played once. They lost to San Diego State by 17. Not a very good start.
Never let.
You could convince me to throw New Mexico in that group too, but we'll hold
I
off
on I won't do
now.
That.
Because I think they're terrible. Like, I've only seen like a little bit of New Mexico play. Most of my opinion of them is based on those two games against UNLV, but they're bad. That is not a good team. But you could, end of the year, maybe they're better and they sneak in there. But if they play this sort of second tier, this Utah State, Boise State, Fresno State, San Diego State tier, and they lose all of those games by double digits, that's not good.
That's an indictment.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably a clear sign that the rebuild hasn't even gotten off the ground, because you're looking at the teams that are actually any decent at basketball and you can't compete with them. Like,
year two and the rebuild hasn't gotten off the ground.
Yeah, not at all. And it might be time to look somewhere else. Like, if you lose all of those games by double digits, you're not going anywhere. All you're doing is being better than the rest of the Mountain West. Because the rest of the Mountain West, the reason UNLV is not the worst team in the conference is because the rest of the Mountain West sunk below them. That's it. If you lose all those other games by double digits. They play Utah State on Saturday. If you go to Logan and win, and then they play Boise State and Fresno State. If you win, you know, two of those three games or something like that, rebuild's going pretty good. Like, that's what you're looking for. Because those are the teams you should be able to compete with. If you lose them all by like 2 or 3 points, makes it a little harder because it's a bunch of losses, but at least it'd be competitive. Although this is the Mountain West, there will be no 2 or 3 point losses. They're either winning by 17 or losing by 17. But that, to me, like, that's how you should be judging this UNLV basketball season. I said at the beginning of the year, I want to see how this team does in Mountain West play. Go get a winning record in Mountain West play. That hasn't happened in 5 seasons. And they can get a winning record in Mountain West play and not beat a team that's going to finish in the top 200 in KenPom. Like, that might happen. So, I'm moving the goalpost a little bit in season. But take that middle tier of the Mountain West, perform well against them, and I think that'll prove something for you. If you can't perform well against them, it's not very good. Now, this game against Nevada specifically, and why that gap was 17 points, why the game was uncompetitive, it's honestly pretty much exactly what Marvin Menzies said, the soundbite we played yesterday. When he was asked, you know, what makes them difficult to guard or match up with, and he said superior talent. That's what it is. I mean, on the offensive end, UNLV couldn't run their base sets. Like, so UNLV has a set where they go through a triple dribble handoff, where all three of the perimeter players, they basically just run sort of their own little dribble handoff weave. And that is not the play. Like, that is just sort of a set that they use to get the defense moving before they run an actual play. And the idea is you want to get the defense moving, hope somebody gets out of position so that when you run an actual play, you get an open shot or whatever. And so UNLV, they do that, and they'll turn it into an isolated ball screen. They'll turn it into a post-up on a block-to-block screen. Last night, they actually ran it for a Joel Tomboy isolation. So, like, they'll run that and get a few different actual plays out of it. But the dribble handoff is sort of inconsequential. It's just sort of going through the motions, getting the defense to move a little bit. They couldn't even run the dribble handoff last night. Like, Trey Woodbury had a turnover and then fouled and led to an and-one fast break. Trey Woodbury had a turnover last night just simply trying to do this dribble handoff at the top of the key. And, like, there were times where UNLV, like, it's supposed to be a fluid dribble handoff, but UNLV would have, the guy would have to stop with the ball, literally hand it to the teammate, and then continue with the dribble. Like, it does you no good. Because Nevada's so long. Because they sit here and they say, oh, Noah about them 6'1", Amari Hardy 6'3". We're going to guard them with two guys that are 6'7". And when you try a dribble handoff, we're just going to throw our arms in there and you're not going to be able to do anything. That's what they do. And they're faster and they're stronger. So, like, that's what it is. Like, UNLV literally could not even run their plays, even when they would run just a ball screen. And, like, they would force Nevada to rotate to help on the ball screen, try to make the pass back across the lane or whatever to the guy that was left open. Nevada's arm just sticks out there. Oh, deflect the pass. Or even if you complete the pass, oh, they get back in time and block the shot. Like, they're just that much better than UNLV. They're longer, they're stronger, and they're faster. So that, to me, like, that's why the gap is so big. There's nothing else. Like, Marvin Menzies could have out-coached Eric Musselman last night. Wouldn't matter. Wouldn't have made a single difference in that game. Because it just doesn't. Because on the other end, UNLV cannot guard that team. They cannot guard that team. The only way they ever beat Nevada is if Nevada misses all of their threes in a game. That's it. Like, in the best example, Caleb Martin. He hits four threes in this game. Caleb Martin is 6'7". UNLV had Noah Robotham on him a lot of the times. Noah Robotham is 6'1". That's half a foot. Noah Robotham literally cannot bother his shot. If Caleb Martin wants to shoot a jump shot, Noah Robotham cannot do anything about it. Marvin Menzies jokingly said, you just have to foul him. Like, if you want to stop it, you just have to foul him. So you cannot stop him from shooting a three when you put Noah Robotham on him. And if he's going to make them, he's going to make them. The other thing with Caleb Martin, by the way, that I love, his form on his shot is, it's like charming. I've never seen a jump shot in college charming. But, like, so he's 6'7". He's 6 inches taller than the guy guarding him. But his form, he also fades away as he shoots. Like, every shot he takes, his upper body sort of fades away. And the point of it is so that you literally, even if you're 6'7", like him, you cannot block his shot. Because he's fading away. You can't reach back and get to a shot. Just not many people are going to be long enough to do that. It's wonderful. And he also kicks his leg out. He is going to get so many foul calls in the NBA because his normal shot is sort of, his legs sort of stick out. He sort of tilts himself at a 45 degree angle or something when he shoots. It's great. So charming. But, like, you can't do anything about it. UNLV cannot guard that team. And so that's what happens. I mean, Nevada scored, what was it, 1.24 points per possession. And I don't even think they thought they played very well. It's like, there's just nothing UNLV can do. It's ridiculous. They lose the team. They're going to lose that team by 20 when they go to Reno. But ignore it. Just pay attention to when they lose to Utah State by 20. That's when it's important. Or beat them by 20. One of the two.
I mean, I just want to talk about points per attempt.
Who had a good points per attempt? Or who had a bad points per attempt?
I think the whole team. Wait. While we were watching the game, literally there were one layup in 7 shots at the rim?
Oh, that was good. They had one possession. Where they got 4 layup attempts on the same possession, missed them all. Next possession, they got 3 layup attempts. They finally made the last one. So, yes, on a 2-possession stretch, UNLV was 1 of 7 on layups. I think for the game, 45% on layups is what they shot in this game. You cannot shoot under 50% on layups. You just can't do it. Unless you hit all of your threes and they suck from three, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But, like, you cannot shoot under 50% on your layups, and UNLV did. I mean, hell, Nevada shot 41% from three. They almost shot better from three than UNLV did on their layups. Like, it's just, you can't win. No chance at all. So, yeah.
It's okay. I'm sorry. I keep checking the briefs to make sure it's not in there. Did we ever find out what was going on with Nick Blair's nose?
He must have got hit in the face. I didn't see him get hit in the face.
Oh, I saw him get hit in the face a lot trying to go up for a rebound. He was constantly sandwiched between two much larger players.
Yeah, Nick Blair with a cotton swab in his nose. Not as good. Only 2 of 8 from the floor. Can't have cotton swabs in your walk-on's nose. That's not how it works. There you go. There's your blowout loss. Ignore it. It's not important. I mean, it is. It is very important because they're your rival and they crushed you, but ignore it. Just going to make you angry. Technically Correct, brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Download the Be Connected sports app. Make sure you have it when you sign up for your new phone account. You can get a $50 wager. It's the Be Connected sports app from Boyd Gaming.
Get in touch with the show on Twitter @Bischoff_Tyler.
Hey, it's Tyler Bischoff. Want the easiest way to bet on sports in Las Vegas? Download the Be Connected sports app for free from the Apple or Google Play stores. Then head to your favorite Boyd location like the Orleans, Gold Coast, or Sun Coast to create an account. And with just a $100 deposit, you'll get a free $50 to wager. Then you'll be able to bet before or during the games you love to watch. Plus, if you use Pay Near Me, depositing money into your account can be done at 7-Elevens, Family Dollar Stores, or CVS Pharmacy. It's the Be Connected sports app from Boyd Gaming.
Bischoff's Briefs.
underpants.
No, I don't want to go to a party in your pants.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants!
Bischoff's Briefs.
Very well.
Biggio Ali Walsh has transferred to UNLV.
You got one of the three names.
Yeah,
right? Biagio Ali Walsh is a former three-star recruit from Bishop Gorman. He went to Cal, the running back.
He was a four-star.
Yeah, if you're trying to make it sound like a big deal, he was. As a freshman last season, he only had four carries for 9 yards. But he played 10 games, played on special teams. Actually, had a forced fumble. Tony Sanchez, Sutton Cofield and Company, that Biagio Ali Walsh is in class at UNLV. He was excellent at Bishop Gorman. I think it was over 4,500 yards in his career and 65 touchdowns. He was the running back when Bishop Gorman was at its peak. I think they were 45-0 when he was there. So, like, he was the running back when that team was as good as it's ever been. He didn't do much at Cal, but he is with UNLV now. Likely to sit out the 2019 season and then have 2 years to play, although Tony Sanchez, when he was on with Cofield yesterday, did say that potentially he could play 3 years, which would suggest he could be eligible this year. I don't really know how that works because he already redshirted at Cal as a freshman, and then last year he played in 10 games. So it's not like there's a medical redshirt option. It's not like there's the four-game red. Like, I don't know how he would get to play 3 years or whatever. I would assume you sit out, then play the next two, but I don't know. They seem
to
think.
Is he going down a division? Is that... UNLV missed all 12 of its first half threes last night.
I was going to say, if you're going to make a good joke, you should just be ready to throw to the next brief, but I realize you don't know when you're making a good joke.
Yeah, I have told you, I'm a, like, 200 hitter. I'm Joey Gallo. I swing for the fences every single time. Every once in a while, I connect.
Yeah. And you don't know when you connect either.
Think he does?
Yeah, sometimes. People start cheering. He's like, oh, I must have got that one. the streak was in jeopardy last night. Joel Tomway ruined the fun, made a three early in the second half. My idea on yesterday's show, my one easy way to beat Nevada, didn't really work out very well. Because
let them rain threes.
Because Nevada made their threes. Nevada was 9 of 22. UNLV was 7 of 26. So you didn't really get beat that badly by the amount of makes there. But UNLV, as you saw, was much worse in every aspect of the game. That UNLV needed that to be about 15 made threes to Nevada making about 6.
Smaller, couldn't shoot, missed at the rim, free throws weren't great, lots of turnovers, lots of fouls. Yeah, every facet of the...
Yep. By the way, this radio station here,
yes,
we employ some people with terrible opinions. First off, Adam Hill wants the streak to end. What is wrong with you, Adam Hill? We need the content. Like, we need the close calls every year so people freak out. But that's if the streak ends, it'll be a beautiful, like, 2 days of the streak ending, and that'll be fun. But then it's over. You don't have the streak anymore. You know, like, that content doesn't exist anymore. If they keep making it, it keeps going. And you get the continual panic a few times a year of, oh, my God, they didn't make a three. And people suggesting they'll trade the cannon for the three-point streak to continue. And then there's Steve Cofield, who doesn't want to talk about it at all. He said, God, you guys are lame. You're all on talk radio, and you recycle the same nonsense every year. I guess that was a directive from Marvin Menzies.
Last Saturday, Jake Bischoff scored his second goal of the season.
We have the audio. Very important to bring you all Jake Bischoff-related news. Here you go.
Through the top of the crease. Ends up with Prance from the point. Back into the corner for Wagner. Wagner works away from Cross, goes to Leslie, to the point. Here's Jake Bischoff. He shoots, he scores! Oh, the offense for both teams hot early in the third, and it's 3-2 Cleveland. The Wolves pull back within one. Jake Bischoff blasts home his second of the season.
They were playing Eric Branstrom, the Chicago Wolves, by the way. We're playing Eric Branstrom and Jake Bischoff together because I assume that's going to be the top defensive pair for the Golden Knights next season. They're just getting them ready down there. Going to call them up first game next year. They're playing 25 minutes each.
I mean, that would make you and Ken very happy.
Yes, very excited. That's best case scenario.
We could sell competing shirts. No. Joel Tambwe suffered a hip injury against Nevada.
So, sounds like a hip injury anyway. Menzies said it happened after his third foul last night. I went back and watched it. Didn't seem like anything happened. I mean, I guess it could have, and he played. He committed his third foul and played like another 7 minutes before he came out of the game. He committed his fourth foul at the 13:21 mark, and he left and never came back in. So maybe Menzies meant his fourth foul, not his third. I don't know. But there wasn't his fourth foul, there wasn't anything either. Like, it wasn't like, oh, yeah, he clearly hurt his hip or anything at all. So this would be pretty massive blow to UNLV if Tambwe misses any time at all, because then your front court's just a bunch of guys. Like, it's Nick Blair and Backy Jong, Jonathan Chamochachua, and Turvell Beck. And, like, Blair has some offensive upside, Jong has some defensive upside, but that's pretty much it. Like, you got guys that are out there just eating minutes, basically, is all it is.
Are they finally going to go to the
Bryce Hamilton super small lineup?
I was going to say the Hamilton Woodbury. Okay, you're the shooter. Everyone else, get him the ball. They get the other team gets the rim.
That's Grinnell.
Yeah,
what Grinnell does. But I to say this, Tambwe, not to play doctor on the air, but like, I didn't see anything, and he walked off the court fine. I know he went back to the locker room at one point, so I don't know. I kind of assume he's going to be okay. Like, it wasn't like we clearly saw he was hurt, and it was like, oh yeah, that's a bad injury. He's going to be done. So
I mean, it also could be he's a fairly intense dude, so it could just be like, okay, your hip is, you've got a bone spur in there, and he's like, I'm gonna go hit that guy.
Like, I know I'm making an assumption, but it seems like, you know,
he's hope for be the okay. best.
You skipped a brief, by the way.
Yes, I did. Do you want me to do it now?
Yes,
I can do it now.
Yes, do it now.
UNLV's announced attendance for last night was 15,786.
That is the largest of the Marvin Menzies era. Last year against Arizona, they got 14,000 and change. So 15,000 is the largest announced attendance. There were at least 10,000 people in the arena, too. Like, it was probably somewhere in the 11,000 to 12,000 range. So 15,000 is still inflated, but it was a good crowd. Didn't get a lot of cheering because the game wasn't good for UNLV fans, but it was a solid turnout in terms of just people being there. And it was primarily UNLV. Like, there were Nevada fans there, but it's not like there were 5,000 Nevada fans. Like, it's not like you had a regular UNLV crowd and then, oh, they got to 15,000 because there were a bunch of Nevada fans. It was primarily UNLV. So I'm glad the fans showed up.
I mean, I feel like at one point there was a Wolfpack chant that started.
Well, yeah, because they were up by 20 and UNLV fans had left. What are they supposed to do? And the only thing I'm disappointed in is that you have all these people show up, and UNLV, with the way they played, basically cemented the idea that, oh, this team's not worth watching.
Jared Cook could sign with the Buffalo Bills.
So the Athletic had a story on the Bills and free agency and about how they have a reputation of being Siberia, and so how the hell do the Bills get people to come play football for them? But they talked to Jared Cook, and he had this fun quote. I just want to be happy. I think it's important where I'm at in my career to enjoy myself and continue to ball. Even though we was taking L's, I found a coach that utilized me. That was fun as hell. He's talking about John Gruden and the Raiders there. I love the idea that Jared Cook thinking he was utilized for any other reason than Seth Roberts was the best receiver on the field with him. Like, the reason he was utilized...
It was a throw Derek Carr could make.
Like, the reason he was utilized is not because John Gruden was like, we got to get Jared Cook the ball. It was because John Gruden said, well, who the hell else are we going to get the ball to?
It was because Jalen Richard was covered.
I also,
and that was the other throw Derek Carr could make.
Jared Cook, actually... He is, that quote there, he is living out the hypothetical of would you rather be the best player on the worst team or the worst player on the best team? And he is saying, best player on the worst team, sign me up. And I'm okay with that. Let's do it.
He's a mercenary.
That's great. Just show up. All right, guys. We are going to win 3 games this year, but I am leading us in catches.
Josh Allen. 3-star athlete Matthew Horn decommitted from UNLV.
This is some really late news. That happened on January 19th.
Oh.
We are on top of this. But yeah, he tweeted out he was decommitting from UNLV. So, by my count, UNLV currently has 19 players that are either signed or committed. So that would be 6 more total spots. Tony Sanchez did say yesterday to Cofield that they are going to sign a total of like 21 to 22 kids. So they're not going to sign the full 25. He said they're going to save some scholarships. They've got some plans for those scholarships. So I don't know what that means. They do have 1 or 2 more commits that haven't announced yet either. But by my count overall, only 3 kids, I believe, have decommitted, which doesn't actually seem like a lot. Like, there's quite a lot of decommitments in college football recruiting. Because, like, kids commit when they're juniors and stuff, and then they got to stay committed for 1.5 years before they sign. And so it's like a lot of kids are like, oh, I made a bad decision. I'm going to commit somewhere else because somebody better wants me. So, you know, UNLV actually hasn't had a lot of kids decommit, which is pretty good. I mean, if you're UNLV, you have a middle-of-the-pack Mountain West recruiting class, and you're not losing kids from it, so.
I mean, I was just going to say you save the scholarships, right, because UNLV is kind of like super clips. Walk-ins are always welcome, and so maybe you got to – I mean, they were part of the ESPN walk-on.
That's the basketball team. Come on now.
Oh, it's not
the football team joke is that they put wide receivers at safety.
I thought the football team joke was that we're like JUCO U.
Like, I mean, right now they are. The last, 17 guys Tony Sanchez has gotten are JUCO defensive players, which is probably good. And it's like, oh, yeah, we suck on defense. Let's go get some kids that can play right away. So, yeah, we'll see. Junior college U. I like that.
The Fremont Cannon was wheeled onto the 1-year-old Thomas and Mack floor.
Are you suggesting they're going to ruin the floor?
I'm just saying you have the heaviest trophy in the in the world, and you went, okay, we just got this brand new floor. They didn't put anything underneath it.
Well, it's not like they rolled it out to half court. They just rolled it out to the corner. They didn't even put it on the court. It's on the baseline. It did not make it inbounds.
Okay, but I'm saying that
technically this brief is incorrect, Jared.
Okay. Well, it just seemed like I was waiting for carpet or, something to protect the floor, and they're just like, nah, I'll just roll it here. A dip, right there seems like a tremendous hazard if someone's, diving for a ball and then all of a sudden there's a dip in the floor. Someone's going to hurt their ankle.
What do you think's going on with this cannon? Calling the cannon fat?
It's super heavy.
Yeah, but it's not it has wheels. It's not like they dropped it from 40 feet and broke into the floor.
You understand the concept of a monster truck, right? It's not the fact that the actual the wheels of a monster truck are heavy, but it's the actual truck that's heavy that causes it to be able to crush other cars. The concept of wheels doesn't alleviate.
I think it crushes other cars because it's bigger than other cars.
I.e., it's heavier than wood. So.
Other cars aren't made of wood?
No, okay, you've mixed my metaphor. Let's call Mike Grimola.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff, brought to you by Boyd Gaming. You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
There's another green brother out there somewhere, older, younger, doesn't matter. You put him on scholarship, too. I'd put 2 other greens on scholarship to get Josh Green.
Mike Grimala of the Las Vegas Sun joins the show. UNLV loses by 17 to Nevada last night. Mike, who had a worse loss, UNLV or Steve Sisolak's hat?
Oh, the hat was pretty bad. I mean, UNLV, you can maybe find a silver lining, but Sisolak, that's a 0% approval rating on the hat.
Yeah, what's the logic there? We're going to put on a hat with both teams' logos because he thinks it's going to appease both teams, but in reality, it just pisses both teams off.
You try not to alienate anyone who might potentially vote for you, but sports fans are not that dumb. I think if you just support the team that you support, I think people respect that.
What did you see Steve Sisolak last night?
I did not see him in the building.
I didn't either. I was disappointed. I thought he was going to show up. I mean, he showed up to a random game in Nevada. What did they play, Colorado State or something? He showed up there, but he wasn't even in the building for the 2 teams in his state? Come on now.
The replies to that hat tweet probably scared him off. Oh, you can't show your face after that.
I mean, not even just without the hat?
No, not you. Got to lay low for a while.
I feel like you have to show up with the hat, though. Like, if you're going to tweet that picture of that hat, and by the way, if you don't know what we're talking about, Steve Sisolak, our governor, tweeted out a picture of a hat that had the UNLV logo and the Nevada logo side by side on it. Terrible hat. But, like, if you tweet it out and everybody tortures you, you got to show up in it, right?
I mean, you should, but just by the fact that he was planning to wear that hat shows you that, I mean, he's not about taking a position in this rivalry. Once it became controversial, he's not going to do it. Like, he's just going to stay home, lay low, let the news cycle pass. He'll pop up again once people forget about it.
Jared, what was your idea for Steve Sisolak?
Oh, I wanted him to ride the Fremont Cannon out onto, like, mid-court, but have it painted blue and red.
Like paint, like a zebra style paint job, or like a up and down the middle, one side blue,
yeah, one side blue, one side red, yeah, and he's just like riding it while wearing the hat.
I don't know that. I don't know. You got to get him to wear the hat first. he seems pretty timid. I don't think he's going to stick his neck out in a sports venue.
All right, what do you think pisses off UNLV and Nevada fans more, Steve Sisolak's hat or when Mike Grimala mispronounces Nevada as Nevada?
It's probably the hat.
Like, it's not you. It's
not really
you.
That
you
big
sure?
of a deal that I say Nevada.
Yes, you pissed. Like, Steve Sisolak pissed off everybody that's a UNLV and a Nevada fan. Mike Grimala pisses off everyone that's a UNLV fan, a Nevada fan, and people who live in the state that do not care about either of those schools because you can't pronounce the state right.
Yeah, well, when the state deserves to be pronounced correctly, I will pronounce it correctly.
Well, here's
I'm capable of saying Nevada.
You are, and you say Nevada often, but you just randomly, like 25% of the time, work in Nevada, and it's just like, where did that come from? Like, you know
because
how to say it.
Nevada is naturally what you people from outside of this region call it.
I don't
like,
know if that's
true. When
you
grow up outside of here, it's pronounced Nevada. That's just the way it rolls off your tongue.
Is that true? Are we sure?
So it slips in sometimes.
Like, I don't ever remember saying Nevada before I moved here. I don't ever remember thinking about Nevada until I moved here.
Yeah, I didn't think about it a lot. It's not, you know, at the forefront of my thoughts when I'm, you know, 20 years old on the other side of the country. But when it did come up, it's Las Vegas, Nevada.
I think you're wrong.
And it's the rule is, the rule of language is, it's supposed to be pronounced the way the people there pronounce it, the way it's pronounced locally. So I am completely in the wrong when I say Nevada. And I understand that.
Okay.
So it's not that I don't know.
Do you understand that when you type UNR in a story, you're also completely wrong?
I
know you hate this argument.
Do people
so
understand
much.
That I do not care at all?
You should, though. You should.
It's a house rule.
No, you know what? I'm 100% correct because my employers tell me to call it UNR. So I'm 100% right when I call it UNR, and I will continue to be.
All right. That's fine. All right. The gap between these two teams is pretty big. How much do you think it matters that UNLV is that far behind a top 10 team?
It depends on how long you think UNR can keep this going. Is it going to be normal for the Mountain West to have a top 10 team every year nationally? I don't think so, but they are here now, and as long as Musselman is there, they're probably going to be around this good. So you kind of got to deal with it if you're UNLV. It's not good enough to be 11-9 in the third year of a rebuild and to just have a game like that where Nevada just comes out and just dominates you just on sheer talent level. And it looks like they weren't even – that wasn't their – that wasn't Nevada's A game. That wasn't them playing as hard as they could. That was just them, you know, rolling the balls out. Hey, it's a Tuesday night. Let's go into another team's arena and just play our game and just crush them. They were up by 25 in the second half. It was not close. It didn't look close. You could obviously – you didn't even need a scoreboard to tell you which team was destroying the other. So UNLV is a long ways off. And, I mean, if you're one of those UNLV fans that says, oh, well, wait till Musselman is gone, then the whole thing is going to fall apart. I mean, it sounds good, and that might get you through the night. But he's there now, and he might be there next year, and he might be the year after. I mean, how long are you willing to wait to close the gap? It's kind of getting late in the game for that.
Yeah, my thing with it is, and as far as evaluating UNLV in the rebuild this year, you shouldn't do it against the Nevada team this year. But UNLV's goal, like Desiree Francois will say, their goal is to win the Mountain West, and that team's in the Mountain West. Like, that's the team you have to beat at some point to win this conference. So, like, It has to matter. And you've got to be better than losing by 17 and not being competitive in that game. So, like, at some point, it's just, if you're going to be a competitive team in this conference, that's who you have to beat.
Yeah, I mean, that's a team that has two guys that are going to get All-America consideration. UNLV needs to get guys that are, you know, on the level that they could get All-America votes. You need guys like that. I mean, Caleb Barton had a play where he took a rebound on the run, and he went coast to coast, and he dribbled between two defenders, and he just went up and dunked it. And it was like the most routine play that he's made all season. And you look around, and there's no one on UNLV that can do that. Like, there's no one that can make that kind of play. It's just a huge talent disparity. The only way to close the gap is to, I mean, Marvin Menzies and the coaching staff, they've just got to recruit at that level. And I know they want to do it through the high school ranks. So, I mean, do they have a Caleb Martin on the current roster? I don't know. Can they find one on the recruiting trail and then wait 2 or 3 years for him to develop into Caleb Martin? That's a long time. That's a long time to wait for players like that to come through the program. So I'm not sure how they're going to close the gap, but I mean, it is very wide, and like they've got to do something.
So they announced the attendance over 15,000 last night. It was by far the best crowd of the year. Do you think UNLV, the way that game went, well, that was their last chance to sort of get people on board to show back up at the Thomas and Mack and watch this team play?
I mean, even if they win that game, are people going to show up for the next game? Like, probably not. It just, in my experience, attendance does not, it's not that reactive. Like, it's one good game does not bring everyone back in. Like, one good season does not bring everyone back in. It's like a delayed reaction where if UNLV makes a tournament this year somehow, they go on a miracle run. Are people going to fill up that building next year?
Yes, no. I think they will.
If you do it 2 years in a row, then they maybe start coming back. You do it 3 years in a row, then you're probably, you know, drawing back most of your loyal fan base, and you can count on some pretty good crowds. One tournament run, one win, one game against your rival is not going to do enough to change the tide. It's got to be a long, sustained winning now, I think, to get those people back.
If they win the Mountain West tournament and found themselves in the Sweet 16, the Thomas and Mack would be sold out for the first game next year.
For one game or for the entire season?
Well, it'd be sold out for the first game and probably like the first 3 or 4. And then if they start 0-4, yeah, it won't be sold out anymore. But if they were to continue to put up some wins, it would continue to be sold out.
Yeah, if you have sustained winning over a long period of time.
No, I'm talking about one tournament run and then 4 non-conference games. That's all they need.
No, it's not going to be that quick.
Then they're good to go. All right, I want to try something new, and we might start doing this with multiple guests here. I have a stat for you. I'm going to read it to you, and then you either like explain to us why it's important or why it's stupid, or just whatever you have on this stat. All right.
Okay.
In the last 80 minutes of basketball, UNLV has not led for a single second.
It tells you that they lost both games and that they weren't close, but I mean, if they make the first shot of the game and then give up a 10-0 run and they led for 30 seconds, does that really change the arithmetic?
I mean, it changes that stat.
Yeah, I don't think it means that much. I think the average margin of defeat is probably a more relevant stat for those two games. Yeah. But that is a nice little wrinkle. It's like an oddity.
I don't like that. I don't like that opinion. I don't know if we're going to do this again because you have disappointed me.
Well, it's more of an oddity than it is like something that's actually predictive or like that like demonstrates something. I mean, what does that stat tell you?
Tells you that they haven't led for the last two whole games.
So would you be okay? Would it be different if they led for the first minute of the game and then gave up the run? Like I said, UNLV had the first possession last night.
Well,
Trey Porter dunked on Joel Tomboy. If they had made the first shot, would that have changed anything, really?
Well, yes. Well, because then the stat would be they have led for 1 minute of the last 80 minutes of play.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that stat. Right. I've never used it.
Ridiculous. All right,
may find different value in it.
We have two different things we want to do with you here. First off, give me your thoughts on the New Orleans Pelicans moving to Las Vegas.
That would be great for Las Vegas. I would love it.
You would love it. Great for Las Vegas and great for Mike Grimala.
What's that?
I said great for Las Vegas or great for Mike Grimala?
Oh, both. I love the NBA. The more pro teams that we have in this city, the better. I don't know why anyone would be against getting an NBA team here, but the sooner that happens, the better.
So, all right, what are the few things that have to happen in your mind?
They have to trade Anthony Davis to the Lakers for nothing. because that will be enough to turn the fan base against the NBA and say, you know, that Pelican fan base that is already frustrated, and then they'll, you know, it'll be, oh, the Lakers, that's the, you know, they always get everything for nothing, and turn the local fan base against the Pelicans. They'll stop going to the games. It's already a very tenuous relationship with that community and the team. You know, they've moved around. They're not really tethered there that strongly. And so once the attendance drops to, you know, very low levels, then you start thinking about, hey, can we take this to another city and maybe generate some interest there? So that trade would be the first domino, I think, in getting that team moving and getting Las Vegas into the conversation.
All right, here's what we want to do with you. We are going to give out tickets to a Lights FC game, and we want to use Mike Grimala to do this. So what we're going to do, we're going to put on Twitter, we're going to ask people to tweet at us something to do with food, like something along the lines of name a vegetable that Mike Grimala will eat. And then we're going to, maybe we'll call you tomorrow just for you to pick a winner, like just 2 minutes. We'll read the answers, and then you pick a winner, and that person will win tickets.
Okay. Do I have to have eaten it, or I would be willing to try it?
I mean, I would certainly be on board with Mike Grimala actually eating these things, but we can just, for the sake of throwing this together, it'll just be which one sounds like the most appetizing, or which one is the most appetizing if he's actually eaten and liked one of them before.
Okay. Yeah, I can do that.
Okay, you're on board. So Mike Grimala is going to help us give away Lights tickets. All right, yeah, we're going to have to figure that out exactly, and we'll tweet that out at some point today. So get ready for your Mike Grimala vegetable opinions or whatever we come up with. Okay. He's Mike Grimala, Las Vegas Sun. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
See you guys.
See, we had to work hard on that because originally Jared wanted to be like, name a food that Mike Grimala eats. And everybody would just say chicken.
No, I meant like would eat. Like name a food. It was supposed to be more like a Q&A. Like, Mike, would you eat?
Right, but everybody would just say chicken. Because they want him to say yes so they can win.
Well, maybe we have that many tickets. I don't know. I haven't talked to promotions.
Check out the podcast on lvsportsnetwork.com. Tyler Bischoff is
technically correct. The best kind of correct.
All right, apparently Jared's mad because I talked too long with Mike Grimala. So we'll talk about the Pelicans maybe coming to Las Vegas another day. Because I have a very important question. Both UNLV and Nevada fans wear shirts and use the hashtag on Twitter of FUNLV and FUNR. Who was first?
I have no idea.
I don't either, but that's what I want to know. Because whoever was second has to stop.
Has to come up with something original?
Yes. It's good. I enjoy them.
Is it weird that it seems like it'd be something that, like, some stupid, like, barstool type, like, oh, this is UNLV barstool, and this is Nevada barstool, and it's just like a, like, is it weird that it feels like it's something, like, one of them created, and then...
Well, it's probably around before barstool would be my guess.
Oh, I mean, like, yes, but it seems like something that would...
It's probably around before the internet.
Maybe.
Be my guess. That's all I want to know, though. Who came up with it first? Because whoever copied them has to stop.
I mean...
Because it's good, but it's not good when both teams do it.
Was there life before the internet?
No, probably not at all. I don't know how you people live before the internet.
Kidding me? Yeah.
What did you people do? Sounds terrible. Or, okay, I'll give this an idea here. Football plays for the canon. Basketball plays for the rights to FUNLV/FUNR.
It's a much lighter trophy. So, you know, I'm concerned about that.
Nobody cares how heavy the cannon is.
I do.
But that's it. If you win, and we'll do basketball because they play twice a year, you can do aggregate score. That means every basket matters. That means you better be shooting in the threes at the end in a blowout.
No, I think it's... If you win first, you get to use it until the next game.
Okay, all right, I'm okay with that. That's fine. So you win, and then if you lose the next one in the season, you're screwed.
Until the next time.
Nope, okay.
Or until the Mountain West tournament.
Yeah.
Then maybe you can win it back.
I'm on board with that. So that means you have to win the last game in the basketball season to be able to use it in football season. It's very important.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yes, I'm on board.
Let's ratchet up these stakes, man.
I very much enjoy the FUNLV and the FUNR. I like that very much, but I hate that both schools do it because it's like, that's the you guys are making the same joke at each other. That's not funny anymore.
I mean.
So I want to know who came up with it first.
There are some very creative jokes that we saw last night that I think we can't mention on the air.
I mean, don't bring it up if you can't mention it on the air.
But I really wanted you to tweet it out.
You're so bad at radio sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Nailed it.
You suck, Tyler.